Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
On Kentucky Anna's ESPN 680, here's Jason Anderson.
All right, we continue with ESPN 680 105.7. Jason Anderson with you. Masters coverage continues. We've got updates throughout the day today and tomorrow. We've got full round coverage on Saturday and Sunday on ESPN Louisville. It is presented by Baptist Sports Medicine, Wooded View Golf Course, and Kentucky Farm Bureau. Thank you to them with the Masters coverage going on. Tiger sitting just off the green on 17, looking at his third shot at a par 4. So he needs to be up and down to stay tied atop the lead at 3 under with 5 other golfers currently right now. It is a zone blitz. We get Louisville, Kentucky, Indiana all in one segment. We start it right now. He is with The Athletic. His name is Jeff Greer. He covers the Louisville Cardinals. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Jason. How are you, bud?
I am doing just fine. I want to talk with talk about good news first before we get into some of the other stuff that came out of that you broke last night at The Athletic. Louisville lands Lamar Kimball, who is nicknamed Fresh, and he's related to Bo Kimball. I know nothing else about him, but I'm on board.
I didn't realize until some people started sending me these articles that he's some sort of distant relative to Bo Kimball. I was definitely more interested in the Fresh nickname, which is awesome. And as I told his dad yesterday, I have decided that I now need to get some sort of nickname. So that'll be something this off season that I work really hard at. The other thing that was really interesting just from talking to them yesterday was the relationship with Purvis Ellison. He played for Purvis in the AAU ball. He's good friends with his son. I remember visiting Louisville back when they were young AAU players back in the day. So it's kind of fun for that family, for them to send their kid here all these years later after playing for Purvis.
Do you think that's one of those things that kind of just worked out? The last kind of thing I can remember like that was Terry Rozier used to always watch through the wire, whatever it was, with Sebastian Telfair, and was like, I want to play for Rick Pitino. And he ended up playing for Rick Pitino. Is it one of those things to where he was inundated around Purvis Ellison, hearing about Louisville and things like that, that when it came open and Louisville was interested, it was like, you know what, this fits?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I do think that they certainly, Terry was obsessed with Sebastian Telfair.
Right, yeah.
Which was always kind of fun hearing him talk about it, because usually guys who get to that level don't quite gush about others, but he definitely did when it came to Telfair. But I think they know that Louisville's a good program. Obviously they're a Philadelphia family, but they certainly were aware of Purvis's accomplishments at Louisville, so that certainly played a part in at least their knowledge of the program.
Is he the mold of what they are looking for in the offseason, assuming scholarships are available? Right now they're sitting at 14, so something will shake out. We know that. But is he the guy that they're going to be looking for, someone that can handle the ball, maybe can score a little bit, or are there other spots that they are looking to fill if scholarships are available?
No, I think this is exactly what they were looking for. I think I would be surprised if they looked at anybody else at this point. I think this is what they were hoping to land, was an experienced ball handler. Kimball played off the ball this past season, but he had been on the previous 3 years at St. Joe's a point guard. Had some injury issues during his time there. He only finished, I believe, one season without some sort of injury that kept him out. He broke his foot as a sophomore and missed the final 7 or 8 games. In that season, he was a leading scorer for his team that season before he got hurt. And then as a junior, he re-injured that same, he re-fractured that same bone and missed the whole season. And then last season came back and had to play off guard because they had just lost kind of their lead, their kind of their scoring guard, I guess, their lead guard to graduation. So he kind of adjusted to that role. But he's been a guy who's always been a point guard. He came up that way. He played at Newman Goretti, which is a powerhouse high school in the Philadelphia area. So that's what he brings to the team. He's there's one description out there of him as a little bowling ball of a point guard. Not that he's like Khalid El-Amin or anything chunky or anything like that, but he's built, man. I mean, he's a little 6-foot point guard who's going to move some people around and find shots for other guys. But I think he's a little bit more of a developed scorer than Kristen Cunningham. So definitely fits exactly what they were hoping to add through the grad transfer market.
There is a part of any player's game that, if you don't know or follow the team or not familiar with that particular person, you simply can't know. Like, I can look at a box score. I can see the numbers around, Kimball. I can see his efficiency rating. I can see assist rate, turnover rate, things like that. But some of the things I don't know is what type of player he is on the floor. I don't mean just like point guard or guard. One of the guys that covers St. Joe's said that he was the quote-unquote heartbeat of the St. Joe's team. And you mentioned this is the exact type of guy that Louisville was looking for. I'm wondering, in your sort of dealings with Chris Mack and the coaching staff this offseason and what they're looking for, and even in the recruiting class, how much in a grad transfer were they looking for somebody between the ears that was also going to be a tougher sort of player that way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely what they needed. Because you've got a group of by and large, good kids who people who know them will say that. They like their players. But just watching Louisville this past season, there was definitely some work that needed to be done as far as team IQ goes, and kind of understanding the moments and situations and what spots they needed to be in and all of that stuff. And so that's why Kristen Cunningham was so valuable to them, was because he was able to point out so much of it. And I think it'll take a while for people to truly understand just how significant he was for that one season. I mean, just having him on his ability to point things out for a lot of guys who are still kind of learning those things at the college level. So when he moves on, you're replacing him with six freshmen. Two of them are guards who are coming in. One is a guy who was kind of forced into point guard duty on the AAU circuit, but is really meant to be a scoring shooting guard, and Josh Nickelberry. And then David Johnson is kind of like Darius Perry in this sort of combo guard role, although he's a little bit bigger. So you're asking a lot of that group of people to be sort of your heady players, those guys and Ryan McMahon, to be sort of your heady court general type guys. So getting someone like Kimball to come in, who is a three-year captain and knows how to play the game and is really good at getting into the lane and scoring and also creating for others, I think will help them a lot. And certainly, they're different people, but will help provide that same sort of leadership, I guess, or whatever character quality you want to assign to Kristen Cunningham. It feels like this kid is the replacement for that.
How do you, if you're guessing, how do you think, and by the way, Tiger bogeyed 17 and now is in the sand on 18, so that's fun. So cool. How would you assess or guess that the scholarship situation sort of works itself out? Because, again, there are three guys with their names in the NBA draft, VJ King, Enoch, and Wara. And if all of those guys return, it's 14 scholarships, and we know not all of those guys are going to return. How do you think it ultimately works out?
Well, reading between the lines, and I don't want to read too deeply into them, because I was told not to read too deep into everything, but the way the tweet was phrased yesterday by my colleague, who had been working, and he knows the Kings pretty well, it just struck me that, he'll graduate this summer, VJ King, yeah. He'll graduate this summer and keep his options open. That, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it sure seems like that's where I would think the departure would come from. But again, I mean, I don't know, because Vijay had told us after the game that he was definitely coming back. And as far as I had heard through last week, that was the case until this all came up this week. And now it seems like he's definitely considering his options. So we'll see. We'll see how that all shakes out. I would be surprised if somebody, well, I'll put it this way. You always assume that someone will leave. And so that's the way, I know we've talked about this before. And I know Mac has said it too. It's 2019. I mean, this is how colleges work. Kids leave. They transfer either mid-season, end of season. After a couple games, they'll leave. So that's just kind of how this whole business works at this point. And you wonder if someone will just say, you know what, I see the writing on the wall. We've got 14 people on scholarship now, even though you can only have 13. There's going to be a lot of competition for minutes. Didn't really go all that great last year. If you're Vijay King, maybe you think that you go somewhere else. Or you know, if you're Darius Perry, you wonder if that's all. Those are your minutes. If you're Ryan McMahon, you wonder if those are your minutes. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that still have to kind of settle. But if you made me pick right now, I would think from the three guys who have entered the draft, that's where the open scholarship will come from.
Yeah, that would be my guess too. And not to, you know, do all the connecting of the dots that you were talking about. But yeah, I mean, it's he graduates this summer, options left open. And so I would guess that would be the case, but we'll see. Something's going to happen. We know that because they've got 14 right now. The investigation, you broke the story last night that Louisville was notified a month ago on the 8th of March on a phone call that the NCAA is opening up the inquiry into the allegations levied against Louisville with this FBI investigation. They'll get, what, an official written, you know, notice with, you know, cool NCAA letterhead to know that, let them know they're serious. That's the next step. And then what do you think happens from there? Do you get a sense from Louisville as to, you know, the timing or how expected it was that this would happen while there's still a trial yet to be, you know, even started later on this month?
Well, first of all, I have to correct the record. I was under the impression that they give a verbal notice first and then they send a printed formal letter. Apparently one or the other works.
Oh, okay.
So that was corrected on that overnight. I reached out to two different people who are sort of compliance experts and hadn't heard back from them. And I thought that was how the process worked from talking to other people and then put that in there. And then turns out that that's not the case. So,
well, typically random people around Louisville might be compliance experts at this point. So you never really know.
That's true. We've all been paying a lot of attention to it for the past couple of years. Right now it's preliminary. It's just looking at, each of the schools mentioned, they're trying to collect probably as much information as possible that the school's compliance departments may have collected. And I'm not speaking, this is not, don't read between the lines. I don't know if Louisville has done that or not. I'm just thinking how NCAA processes work. They typically will coordinate with the schools in the early stages because the schools will have conducted their own investigations into stuff too. That's what they're compelled to do by NCAA law or bylaws. But there's not a whole lot they can do otherwise until the trials all end, which you mentioned. I think the next one starts on the 22nd, so in like 10 days or so. So that certainly, once that's over and the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office say, okay, go ahead, then you would assume the NCAA will jump right in. What's interesting to me, I mean, there's a lot of interesting aspects of all this. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated. One is how much of the evidence collected by the FBI that has not been put into indictment, you know, documents or brought up in court has the NCAA obtained from the FBI, if anything, because we know that they're very much interested in collecting all of that information. There's a huge difference between a felony, a federal crime, and an NCAA violation. The NCAA will be very interested to know if there are other things that came up. Second of all, they've got a bunch of testimony that came out in the trial last fall That is testimony. It's not written into charging documents. It's not written into federal, federal documents or charging documents, whatever you want to call them. It's just someone saying it in court. So they may have to pursue some of that stuff too. And then on top of all of that, what's really interesting with Louisville is, of the people who have been fired or sent off from school, meaning Brian Bowen or the coaches and Tom Jurich, only one of them is still under the NCAA umbrella and has complied or has to comply with NCAA requests for an interview, and that's Kenny Johnson, who is on LaSalle's coaching staff. And he, right now, as far as I remember, is only implicated in court testimony, unless I've forgotten all the different documents I've read. But if it's only testimony, that gives you a little bit more leeway to deny stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a lot still to sift out for the NCAA.
Yeah, I guess court testimony, real quick, and I know you got to go, but the visiting record, was that in court testimony as well when they said do not put Christian Dawkins on the record, and then compliance, you know, had to go back and say no, he needs to be a part of it, and then they put him as an AAU coach instead of, you know, what he actually was.
Yeah, I don't remember all of the.
So if that's testimony,
that's a big factor too.
Yeah, because that's essentially lying to the NCAA about a recruiting visit that took place, because you're signing your name and saying, no, NCAA, it's all good here, when they knew full well it was not. So that's three things that Louisville's going to have to fight with the NCAA about. We'll see what ends up happening. Jeff Greer of The Athletic covers the Louisville Cardinals. Jeff, as always, really appreciate the time, sir. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate you having me.
Kentucky.
His name is John Hale. He works for the Courier Journal, and he covers the Kentucky Wildcats. John, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine, except for the last a hole and a half for Tiger Woods. But other than that, doing just fine. Ashton Hagans makes his announcement a couple of nights ago that he is going to return to Kentucky. He's not going to test the NBA waters. The transferring thing that I think some people were throwing out there as, hey, what if that's a possibility as well? That's not happening either. What do you think, I guess, went into the decision for Ashton Hagans, and then on top of that, the impact for Kentucky with him saying, I am returning, and there is no question about it?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that probably went into it. One, I thought it was really interesting that he just decided to come back without testing the waters. I thought this was the point he'd eventually get to, just because he frankly wasn't good enough down the stretch to be guaranteed a first-round pick by any means, and maybe not even a second-round pick, because he can't really shoot and he had all those other issues. So I thought he'd get to this point, but I thought he'd go through workouts. I thought he'd go to the combine and then get there. The fact that he just said, I'm coming back, I think A, says that he was pretty realistic, that he and his family sat down with John Calipari, and I think John Calipari is making a point, and he said this on his radio show a couple weeks ago, that maybe in the past, whereas he was just more laissez-faire about whoever goes, now telling guys you need to come back or it's not the best step for you. I think that's part of it. And then the other part has to be P.J. Washington. I mean, Ashton Hagans and all these other guys sat up close and watched P.J. Washington all year, know that he was a second-round pick a year ago. He came back to school. He put in the work. He performed like he wanted to, and now he's going to be a lottery pick or a mid-first-round pick. And I'm sure a guy like Ashton sees that and says, I can do that too. I can take that step. And that's what happens for him. As far as what it means for Kentucky, I think it's a huge deal. And they didn't really have a pure point guard if he didn't come back. I mean, Emmanuel Quickley can play point guard, obviously, but he's not the distributor that Ashton is at his best. Tyrese Maxey is more of an off-the-ball scorer kind of guard. So if Ashton had left, I was in the spot where I thought maybe they should go out and get a grad transfer point guard who could just, you know, throw it to all these other guys who can score. But with Ashton back, it gives you that, gives you a really good defender when he's on his best game. And his shot got better as the course of the season went. Somebody tweeted me the other day, why should we be excited about a point guard who can't shoot coming back? I was like, well, I mean, he's a freshman in college. He can get better. His shot got better over the last couple of months, and with an entire offseason to work, knowing that he has to do that to get drafted and where he wants to be, I think that it's a thing that can improve over the next year or two.
Yeah, it's sort of where we are in college basketball these days. And look, one and done has something to do with it. Cal's, the way that he has structured his team year in and year out has something to do with it. But We view a freshman and say, well, that's who they're going to be the rest of their career. Well, however they look as a freshman, well, there it is. Like, Buddy Hield was a terrible shooter when he got to college. And then when he graduated, he shot like 49% his senior year at Oklahoma. And now he's a pretty damn good scorer in the NBA. But he couldn't shoot a lick when he got to college. And I'm not saying that's Dashon Hagans, but I do feel like we get to this level of, and Kentucky's had it where, you know, the freshmen are there, they're good, they go on. Freshmen are there, they're good, they go on. And if they return, well, then that's probably them not living up to expectations. That Hagan's shot may not be phenomenal, but he does have the ability to improve over the years. Like, he's not just simply that's the guy he's going to be if he plays 4 years at Kentucky, was the guy you saw against Auburn.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason that P.J. Washington is so important in kind of ending that narrative. I counted it up the other day, and before this year, of the 40-plus players that John Calipari had recruited at Kentucky, 21 of them had come back for at least 2 years. And only two of those guys got drafted in the first round, Terrence Jones and Willie Cauley-Stein. And obviously Willie was more of a project, so it's not like he was a five-star guy who anybody expected to be one when he got here. So there was some legitimacy to the idea that if you come back to Kentucky, it might just be who you are and you haven't got better. I mean, we saw it with the Twins. We saw it with guys like Dakari Johnson or whatever, and they just basically got drafted in the same spot they would have got drafted or not drafted at all the year before if they had just gone after 1 year. So I think there was some truth to that, but the fact that P.J. Washington came back and so dramatically improved his draft stock and proved you can do that at Kentucky, I think gives guys like Dashon Hagans hope and some example that they can go that route too.
It also probably means that R.J. Hampton's going to end up at Memphis, right?
Yeah, I can't see a spot for RJ. I mean, that would have been difficult anyway with Ashton, even if he had left, because RJ wants to play with the ball in his hands, and I don't know how he would do with Tyrese Maxey and Emmanuel Quickley in terms of Kentucky's best offense. But for me, even talking to RJ last summer at the Under Armour event in Atlanta, Memphis always kind of felt like the fit to me, and that he Penny can let him play how he wants. He's got a big guy there in James Wiseman, and that just seems like that's where that's going.
Yeah, when Trey Jones announced he was returning and Dashon Hagans announced he was returning, I'm like, oh, well, no reason to worry about where Hampton's going to end up. He's going to be, playing for Penny and Memphis, so he gets a Penny benefit. He may have ended up in Memphis anyway, but it makes the decision easier if he reclassifies. Tyler Hero, I think, is a very, very big decision and an impactful decision for Kentucky. A year ago at this time, we were wondering, okay, is it Jared Vanderbilt, P.J. Washington? Who's going to return? Do both of them go pro? Do both of them return? Is it one or the other? And if it's one or the other, which one would you rather have return? And I said last year, like, P.J. Washington made them different if he were to return. Vanderbilt could return, but he's not the player that P.J. can be. I feel like Hero is that PJ decision now, that if Hero returns, Kentucky can be special. They can still be really good, but with Hero on the team could be really special. What do you think goes into his decision? He hasn't even announced yet whether or not he's going to test the draft waters. I'd be shocked if he didn't do that. But what do you think goes into Tyler Hero and what this next month and a half will be like for him?
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of case study. I assume he's going to test the waters. I assume that anyway. And then yesterday when Kentucky announced Keldon Johnson was testing the waters, the first release they sent out said that, like Tyler, Keldon's going to do this or whatever. And then they sent a release, a correction and said, oh, that was a typo. Sorry.
Yes, Tyler who?
I assume that means that we're going to get that any day now and maybe any hour at this moment. But for me, it's interesting for both him and Keldon because Keldon was very specific in that statement that he wanted to be a lottery pick, and if he didn't think he was going to be a lottery pick, he might come back. I would still be shocked if Keldon Johnson came back. But ESPN's latest mock draft that came out today had him dropped, I think, to the low 20s, and that's obviously farther away from the lottery. Tyler was projected around 20, depending on where you look. They've never really had a guy come back who was projected as a clear, surefire first-rounder, maybe Terrence Jones. Mock drafts were less common then than they are now. But all these other guys were like borderline first, second rounders who came back. So if Tyler or Keldon, I think both of them had the potential to come back and develop their way into top 10 picks, especially Tyler, because I think he could be an All-American if he comes back next year. But it's really hard to turn down that guaranteed money. And I imagine as he goes through these workouts, he goes through the combine, it's going to be a feel of whether he could maybe sneak into the end of the lottery or towards the middle of that spot. And if he's contending for a lottery spot, I can't imagine that he comes back. But maybe if he goes to those workouts and they say, yeah, late first round, we'll see, he would bet on his potential and come back for another year to improve.
Yeah, I just there's a part of me that says, you know, even like there's a part of me that says Keldon's gone regardless, because I think he's going to be a first rounder. And whether he's a lottery pick or not, like you're right. The release said in his, you know, statement that, you know, if I'm in the lottery pick, I'll keep my name in the draft and follow my dreams. Right. That's just saying if I'm in the lottery, I'm definitely going to stay. It doesn't mean if I'm not in the lottery, I'm coming back. I just can't imagine that Keldon viewed the way that he was this year. And a lot of people talking about him from the NBA standpoint would go there, go through all of the workouts and everything and go, no, I'm going to return for 1 year, when it doesn't really seem like that was the plan ever for Keldon Johnson. Hero to me is just a different beast, and Hero might have a better grade than Keldon Johnson when it's all said and done, but it doesn't really seem like that was the plan for him. You know, what do you think happens if Hero returns next year? Is in your estimation, is Kentucky, you know, the number one team in the land with Hagans, Hero, Maxey, Whitney, you know, Keon Brooks, Sestina now in the mix as well? I want to get your thoughts on Richards and EJ Montgomery, but is Hero decision the difference between, you know, being a top 10 team versus being in contention for the number one overall team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would certainly put them in the conversation, obviously not knowing what the other teams are doing and who they're going to return and who they're not, but it would be hard to imagine that there would be any team that was more talented. Obviously, Kentucky would maybe still have some questions in the post, depending on what EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards do over the next couple of weeks. But getting Sestina, the grad transfer, eases some of those concerns. They've got all those, you know, 3-4 hybrid guys, and Ken Brooks and Khalil Whitney and Dante Allen, that they could probably mix and match, even if they lose a big guy. I mean, if Hero comes back, and I'm not ready to project that's going to happen, but if he did, I mean, the sky's the limit for that team for sure. I think we learned a little bit of a lesson this year about talking about super teams and all the hype, and I bought into it as much as anybody. I think Tony beat Duke by 15 in the season opener. So I think we should maybe, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, but I would put them up there with any team in the country with that roster.
Yeah, we were thinking, I talked about this earlier this week, that, you know, we were thinking, you know, Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke in whatever particular order, were like, wow, there's three really, really, like, legit super teams. The national champions are going to come from that group. None of them were in the Final Four. Not even in the Final Four for either of those teams. So I think that's certainly something to keep in mind. Nate Sestina, 6'9", 245, grad transfer, can face up, got some skill apparently, can knock down the three, almost 40% last year at Bucknell, so a little bit of that P.J. Washington in him. What do you think about Nate Sestina and how he fits in with this Kentucky team right now?
I think he's a really useful piece. I mean, to me, he seems like a poor man's P.J. Washington. It's basically what you look at him on paper. Obviously, he's going to get some comparisons to Reed Travis too, just because of the physical size and the grad transfer thing, but his playing style seems more like PJ to me, in terms of he rebounds, he averaged like 8-something rebounds a game in the Patriot League, which is obviously going to go down against better competition, but he can stretch the floor. He shot as well as PJ did from three, and actually I think took way more. I think he took around 100 threes last year. He's a great free throw shooter, around 80%. I don't know for sure that he will start, and obviously a lot of this has to do with who else comes back and where they fit all these guys in, but John Calipari was very adamant during the tournament that he was not going to go get a grad transfer to sit on the bench and just be a token veteran, and I don't think there's any reason to think that Nate Sestina is not going to play a really important role for them. I think as of now, knowing who's on the roster, I would not be shocked at all if he started, and if they get a Hero back and have to slide a Whitney to or to a four, or if one of the, you know, both the big guys come back or whatever, maybe he comes off the bench, but he's going to play a lot for them next year.
I was talking earlier this week about what we've seen in a recent trend, John, and that is, you know, it's one particular stat, but there might be something to it, about effective field goal percentage, teams that can shoot it really well. Four of the last five teams that have won the national championship have been in the top 20 of effective field goal percentage, and three of those in the top 10. Virginia this year was number 19. But I offered some context with them being number 19, and that is from 2002 to 2014, they would have been in the top 10 with their effective field goal percentage this year. Cal is not a guy whose offenses traditionally rank very high in that category, 70s, 80s, sometimes in the 100s. And he had one team that was number 14 in the nation in effective field goal percentage, and that won the national championship in 2012. With this team, the roster construction, the way we're seeing college basketball, Do you think there's an adjustment coming from Calipari, a pivot, if you want to call it that, from Calipari and how his offense is constructed, is ran, how the roster is even built from Cal, the way that we're seeing college basketball and certainly the NBA heading?
I think that we're moving in that direction. I don't know how quickly he's moving that way. It's interesting to me. It seems like the way the roster is constructed now, especially if one of Richards and Montgomery were to leave, which obviously they don't have any business going in the draft, but crazy things happen at Kentucky. He would almost be forced to play kind of a four out with, you know, one of those three, four guys at the four and Sistina or whoever else at the five. Even if Sistina's at the four, he's obviously a stretch four. We've seen him do that with P.J. Washington over the last year. We even saw him do a little bit with Derek Willis a couple of years ago. So I think he's getting to the point where he's embracing that. But part of me just thinks if all these guys come back and there's a Nick Richards, there's an E.J. Montgomery, there's a Nate Sistina out there, Cal just loves those big dudes. And so I would still not be shocked to see him play, you know, two big guys in traditional post lineup, and we'll see how that goes from there. But if he has the pieces, and I think he's realizing that maybe both from a winning game standpoint and a recruiting standpoint, with the guys they're still recruiting, Matthew Hart and Jay McDaniels, they're both stretch fours. If he gets one of those guys, I think he almost has to play that way.
Yeah, and if he gets Hero back in one of those guys, then going to be a team that's going to be built with shooters. Sistina can shoot. Mac, you mentioned a score, but he can certainly shoot it. Hero, we know, can shoot it. Matthew Hurt can shoot it. Quickly, I think, is a better shooter than what he, you know, percentage-wise this year was. So, yeah, they would have some guys that maybe then next year it actually would be the best shooting team Cal has ever had. Instead of just saying that.
Yeah, E.J. Montgomery can make shots.
That's right.
We didn't see him hit a bunch
exactly
of threes,
right,
but he can stretch the ball.
That's exactly right. John Hale of the Courier-Journal covering the Kentucky Wildcats. John, as always, I really appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Indiana.
He covers the Hoosiers for the Indy Star. His name is Zach Osterman. Zach, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How about you?
I am doing just fine. You know, we've been talking about roster construction and things like that in college basketball as we wrap up this college basketball season. Clearly Indiana has some spots available and some feelers out there with some players that have yet to actually make their decision in terms of 2019 freshmen. But we're also talking about Louisville grabbing a grad transfer, Kentucky grabbing Nate Sistina. What are the feelers out for Indiana and Archie Miller for, you know, additions to next year's roster?
Well, you're right. There is space. There's three open scholarships, even if you account for the two signees that will replace the two outgoing seniors, Armand Franklin, the Indianapolis City Player of the Year, and obviously Trace Jackson Davis, who is a McDonald's All-American. So right now, Indiana's probably not – I mean, it's certainly not a scattergun approach to offers. I think Indiana's very heavily involved with Joey Brunk, who is an Indianapolis kid who spent 3 years at Butler but has two more to play as a graduate transfer. He's a sort of a true forward center type, would give him some post-depth that, quite frankly, they lacked in a pretty significant way. Last season when Deron Davis was down and when Race Thompson was dealing with his concussion. They've also gotten involved with a shooting guard from IMG Academy, who I believe is originally from New York, and I will butcher his name, but his name is Lester Quinones, or Quinones, and he's, by all accounts, a very, very good three-point shooter, which is obviously something that, frankly, has just been a problem for far too long at Indiana, a problem that is gone on longer than what should be acceptable for a program of Indiana's stature. And so those are probably the two big names right now. Indiana's also got its hat in the Harlan Beverly ring, but Kansas is there, Michigan State's there. I'm not really sure how that's going to shake out. So I think what you're kind of looking at right now, if you're Indiana, is certainly another big, if you can get one, I think maybe in the grad transfer mold, just some experience down low, rather than looking for somebody developmental that maybe isn't going to be able to help you a ton next season. And then at the same time, probably at least one guard for shooting help, maybe even a couple. Indiana's also gotten involved in Jalen Windham's re-recruitment. He's a shooting guard from Ben Davis, who was originally committed to Georgia State, but then when Ron Hunter left, obviously, things opened up for him.
What do you think would be more important for this team then if you're looking at additions next year? Would it be some depth and some size to help out inside, or is it the lack of shooting that just has to be addressed for somebody to knock down some shots from behind the arc?
I mean, my
or the answer is yes.
Yeah, right. I don't think you can go wrong either way. I mean, Archie Miller is the one who's on record as saying nothing held Indiana back so much last season as its inability to hit threes.
Yeah.
And these last two seasons statistically have been the two worst three-point shooting seasons in IU history. Last two seasons ago, Archie Miller's first season was the worst, and then the season that just finished replaced that. So if that gives you kind of an idea where things stand behind the arc, Indiana really, really needs to get that fixed. Now, I think that some of that has to be on this roster. There are very few just sort of plug-and-play pickups that can come into, freshmen that can come into college basketball and drain 41% of their threes. Graduate transfers, as I think we learned at least to some degree with Evan Fitzner coming from St. Mary's to Indiana last year, that can switch systems, switch campuses, switch coaching staffs, everything, and just nothing changes in their game, nothing changes with their impact and their statistical sort of profile. So I think that you've also got to be looking, if you're Indiana, at Rob Phinisee, Al Durham, Devontae Green, some of the fixes needing to be on your roster, not in your recruiting. But I also understand, or I also certainly see the value of a player like Joey Bronk. I jokingly refer to this as the Tom Izzo theory of always having one more big man than you need. I think that there's a lot of vouch for that in the Big Ten, and particularly if you want to play basketball the way Archie Miller wants to play, very sort of rugged defensively, that pack line style. That's going to count a lot on rebounding, that's going to count a lot on guys to anchor around the rim. And really, as much as the three-point shooting was a problem, frankly, all season for Indiana, the month that, if you're looking for kind of the section of the season that ultimately undid this team's NCAA tournament chances, it was January when they had no post depth to speak of behind Juwan Morgan because Deron Davis and Race Thompson were both injured. So I think you're in a situation now where, yes, as a broad brush sort of question, three-point shooting badly needs to be addressed. But I also think this roster specifically could really use the post depth that someone like Joey Brunk, who's obviously experienced but still has a couple years left to play, would provide.
Yeah, for Archie, too, I mean, it's got to be something that's quite annoying because his teams at Dayton were pretty decent shooters as well. He had a couple of teams that were really good. He had a team that shot almost 40% from behind the arc. His last year at Dayton, they shot 38.4, and the team that made the Elite Eight shot 37.7. So he's had some teams that are, some really good shooting teams, and then he takes over Indiana, and as you said, it's the worst and then worst. Back-to-back years shooting teams from behind the arc for Archie's teams. I got to get your thoughts on the guy showing up to the baseball game, Bob Knight, back on campus. Now, whether or not there were other times he's been on campus that weren't really reported, but this one was public and was at the baseball game. What do you think the implications are of Bob Knight showing up in public on campus and watching a sporting event at Indiana?
That's kind of a question that has not lingered the way that I just sort of assumed that it would, if that makes any sense. And you're right. I mean, it's been kind of an open secret that Knight at various times has returned to, if not IU, then certainly Bloomington for private functions with old friends, professors and university types that he stayed in touch with after he left. But I don't know what the odds would have been. I don't know if, Vegas would even lay odds on possible events that would host Bob Knight's official return to Indiana, and an IU Penn State baseball game would be anywhere near that list. And I think what surprised me, and maybe it's just the time of year, it's a little 5 week up here in Bloomington, and everybody after that is going to turn their attention toward finals and graduation, and then boom, it's the summer and everything kind of slows to a crawl. But it is interesting to me that everything that after sort of the initial, furor over that of just the initial flurry of, oh my God, he's at Bloomington, he's at a baseball game, it's Bob Knight, he's on campus again. It hasn't really kind of kept running the way that you would expect.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably come back up, I'm guessing, sometime next fall. You know, we saw what happened last spring. Does this mean Bob Knight is coming back for a basketball game? I really don't know. Knight leads a fairly private life these days, which he's, of course, entitled to do. You know, he has the speaking engagements that he does with some regularity, but by and large, he doesn't do, you know, media anymore. He obviously stepped away from ESPN a while ago, and this was not completely out of the blue, but it wasn't something that was, you know, advanced with a lot of fanfare. It was just basically sort of one of those situations where it was kind of, hey, just be ready in case, and we'll let you know if you know, you need to really crank it up.
Yeah.
So maybe he does something like that for a basketball game again. Maybe he finally returns for, you know, somebody's one of the title team reunions. I'm trying to just do the quick math in my head and figure out if we're coming up on one. I don't think we are in 2020, maybe 2021 when they'll do the 40-year reunion of 81. But maybe he finally kind of comes back around for something like that. I don't know, but I would never have been able to forecast that he would have shown up the way that he did on Saturday. Yeah. So the man's obviously capable of surprise.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening before it's all said and done. Zach Osterman of the Indy Star, he covers the Indiana Hoosiers. Zach, great stuff as always, man. Very much appreciate the time today, bud.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's a zone blitz on ESPN 680 105.7. We'll get a Westwood One update coming your way from the Masters before we are done here in this hour. I said it on Monday when, you know, people were talking about it, and even over the weekend as well when he first showed up. Bob Knight's going to be at Assembly Hall again. He will be out there and waving to the crowd. That will happen before he dies. And
I don't mean to say this in the wrong way.
Okay.
Will it be in a casket?
No, it won't be. No, it won't. I think it'll be before that. And I think if it gets to the level of him sort of feeling like it's heading in that direction, like, I don't know his health, but if you get to the degree of you feel like it's heading in that direction, then I think you go through and try to make amends as much as you can before it's over. And that might be returning to Assembly Hall and finally getting over that. And just say, okay, well, you know, I may not have much time left, but let's go ahead and try to heal some old wounds that are there. I think that will absolutely happen. Now, I don't know if it's going to take that to where it's like, oh my goodness, he's, you know, his health isn't great, or if it's just going to be the thawing being complete and him saying, you know what, let's just do it right now, and not have to worry about it being a last second type deal of trying to make amends.
I know this is going to sound kind of messed up, but I imagine like there's eventually, when unfortunately that time happens and Bob Knight passes away, he's probably going to have some service in Assembly Hall, you would think, right?
Not right now, he wouldn't.
Right, well, maybe that's fair too. In my head, I just have this image of like everyone shows up for it, and the fans have their own service, but whenever it comes to the boosters and the current administration there, they just flip Knight over in his casket so that they can kiss his butt one more time.
I mean, I think he would like that, but I something tells me he's not going to get an arena full of people like it was Ali. Something tells me that's not going to happen in Bloomington the way that it happened here in Louisville. But I do expect him to be there on this side of the dirt at Assembly Hall, you know, before it's over. Rick Bozich is going to be our guest at 5 o'clock, and we'll talk only about that. Will Bob Knight have a public ceremony at Assembly Hall when he passes? We'll get into that conversation with Rick Bozich. You never know. Watch, though, if that happens and Magic's like, I told you! I don't know where we'll be then. But I'll know about it, Gipper, and I'll be happy. Not happy about how Tiger finished his round. Here's Westwood One's update.
From the Augusta National Golf Club, Westwood One Sports presents this special report on the Masters. I'm Ted Emmerich. Tiger Woods said he proved to himself that he could compete at the highest level again last year. He was in the mix at the final two majors, then claimed victory at the Tour Championship. So Woods, of course, creating plenty of buzz coming into the week. He didn't do much to quiet that in the first round.
Par putt, he's over it, it's on the way, and it's it. So Tiger Woods completes his round, a 200 par round of 70, 35 on the first nine, 35 on the second nine, four birdies, two bogeys, And the man who's won the second most major championships of all time has himself in position after day one at the Masters.
Mike Tirico with the call. Tiger's round could have been even better if he had made a few short putts along the way. But at 2-under, he's one shot behind the leaders, John Rahm, Adam Scott, Justin Harding, and Patton Kizzire. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 2019 Masters on Westwood One.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges, and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
At CDW, we get that you need a network that keeps your business moving forward.
Us for not. Backwards everything, do we?
Either way, CDW has experts who can design and implement a secure, innovative network built on Cisco DNA that learns and adapts to your needs to keep your business moving forward.
Idea good as that.
IT orchestration by CDW. It get who people. I mean, people who get it. Find out more at cdw.com/Cisco.
Kronos, providing HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support, motivate, and engage them. Learn more about Kronos HR, payroll, talent, and time at kronos.com/HR swagger. That's kronos.com/HR swagger.
Augusta National isn't giving players all that much in this first round. The top score, 3 under par. And now three players share the lead as Patton Kizzire closes with a bogey at 18 to fall to 2 under, a 70 today for Kizzire. The three players at 3 under, Justin Harding, Adam Scott, and John Rahm, all with 69s. Several players at 2 under, along with Kizzire. We mentioned Tiger Woods. Also, Ricky Fowler, a 2 under 70 today. At 1 under par, Dustin Johnson, who is through 10 holes. Phil Mickelson just dropped the shot at 10. He's at 1 under, 2 back, along with Jason Day and Brooks Koepka. Disappointing finish for Rory McIlroy. Bogeys at 17 and 18. Rory cards a 1 over 73, so McIlroy 4 back as he looks for the one major he has not won in his career. Jordan Spieth 4 over midway through his round. From Augusta, I'm Ted Emrick, Westwood One Sports.
Happy with a couple decisions that I made in this Masters pool that we're in with Locke and Andy's in it and a couple of others as well, that I avoided Rory because I thought everybody would pick Rory on their team, and he was way too expensive anyway. So it's like, if you're going to pick Rory, then you're going to have to take some lower level guys too. Dustin Johnson, same thing. So avoided him, avoided Spieth. So I feel good about that, at least the way they're playing right now. So all of my guys are at least even or below par except for Matsuyama. +3 today. You better get your act together there, Matsuyama. And I switched out last second, Magic, because everybody cares about this. Everybody cares? Switched out last second. I was going to have Paul Casey and a couple of other guys, but I wanted to get Siwoo Kim and Charlie Hoffman on my team, and I couldn't do that if I had Paul Casey. But if I dropped Casey and picked up Tiger Woods, then I can get those guys that I thought were really good value. So I dropped Casey, went Tiger Woods. Casey's sitting at +5 right now. And Tigers -2. All right. Yeah, nobody cares. Not a single soul cares. Magic cares. Ha ha. That's right. Texter at 437-9680 says, Magic, you said what we were all thinking. That is exactly right. And if you were thinking about any fitness equipment, you'd better be thinking about the Fitness Market. That is a spot for you. Two great locations inside the Snyder on Westport Road. Or the Superstore, corner of Plantside Drive and Watterson Trail. All the brands you know, the brands you trust. We've got the Precor treadmill, but they've got elliptical spin bikes. They've got rowing machines. They've got home gyms. They've got anything you need that you might be looking for in fitness equipment. They can work with you in your budget. They can finance you. The Fitness Market is the spot for you. They've got used equipment as well. If you're looking for some of that, it is the Fitness Market. Two great locations. That is inside the Gene Snyder on Westport Road in the Superstore Plantside Drive at the corner of Waters and Trail. Chris and Pat White are in business 19 years with the Treadmill Medic Services, delivers, installs, all in one spot. Not multiple different companies you got to go through for all of those things. It's all a one-stop shop at the Fitness Market. Check it out online at thefitnessmarket.com. We'll take a timeout, come back. Rick Bozich will be our guest at 5 o'clock. We'll wrap up this 4 o'clock hour with more Zone right after this.
Welcome back to The Zone, presented by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Jason Anderson.
Masters coverage on ESPN 680, 105.7 and 93.9. The Ville is presented by Baptist Sports Medicine, Wooded View Golf Course, and Kentucky Farm Bureau. We've got the Westwood One updates for you today and tomorrow. Then we will have full round coverage on Saturday and Sunday starting at 2 o'clock on ESPN Louisville. We talked a lot about in the first hour, about Lamar Kimball committing to Louisville, the grad transfer from St. Joe's, who is a ball handler. He's 6 foot, 185, a point guard, combo guard, but really he'll be going back to point guard with Louisville. That's where he was early on in his career at St. Joe's, and they moved him to the two spot, where he was more of an overall scorer, not necessarily a shooter, but an overall scorer. Louisville needs help, and they need help in terms of ball handlers and creators. That's what they need. Now, Samuel Williamson will certainly help. If they get Wara back, that'll be beneficial. But they were going to go into next season with Perry and McMahon as the primary ball handlers. And certainly David Johnson is a guy that's going to, you know, handle the ball as well. And, you know, 6'5", 170, he's a longer guy as well. But if you're talking about somebody that can be a primary ball handler as, you know, quote-unquote the point guard that would play beside a, whether it's a David Johnson or Williamson or Wara, it was essentially going to be Perry or McMahon. And what I talked about last year with Louisville that Chris Mack had to deal with and try to find a way to win games and to score with the construction of the roster, there were some good offensive players. Enoch obviously had some skill around the bucket. And Jordan Wara is a really talented scorer. And Kristen Cunningham was a fine point guard and was really, really good in the ACC in dishing out assists. And Ryan McMahon can knock down shots. And Dwayne Sutton, for a good portion of the season, was a really good player and a knockdown shooter. And Malik Williams can stretch the floor. Like, there were some nice pieces to what Louisville offered. But if you're talking about how to get the ball in the hands of those players or how to put them in position to where they can be successful, they didn't really have anybody on their team last year that could break down a defender, get inside the defense, break down the defense as a whole, and then kick it out, get the ball movement, get the defense scrambling, or just simply break somebody down and go to the cup and finish. Like, a lot of their points came from whether it was, you know, taking jump shots in transition, Jordan Wara, you know, taking some jump shots, or it was ball movement, slashing, you know, motion offense. There wasn't an inside-outside game either because Enoch was not going to give the ball back. And so they're trying to score with those aspects of their game that just weren't there. Louisville needs creators, and that's what Lamar. I don't know who's Larry Kimball, by the way. Lamar Kimball.
He does the evening news in Kansas City.
No, he does not. I can promise you that. What was Kimball's first name in The Fugitive? Dr. Kimball. What was Dr. Kimball's first name? I wish it was Larry. Many texts will come in about Dr. Kimball's first name there. But Lamar Kimball, that's what he's going to do. He's going to create. He'll be handling the rock as the point guard, but he's proven that he can score at St. Joe's. He can be a guy that's really quick in the open floor, and he can break down a defender, and he can knock it down if need be. Louisville needs more of those guys. I wouldn't be surprised if they're still not done in that.
Jason.
UPS is now hiring package handlers in Louisville. Package handlers earn competitive wages. And with UPS's Metropolitan College program, you can graduate 100% debt-free. Get in the game with UPS. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.